Mmm, the first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.
What are we doing here? We doing a... Oh, you know what?
2 days left.
This is it? Tomorrow is the final day.
Yeah, it's the last day for the promotion where you can... Your pick, right? Any guide and any MAPS t-shirt included with any bundle. It's the promo, I guess.
Most popular right now is the sexy athlete.
That's the one a lot of people are getting.
That's the most popular. Sexy athlete, and then the fasting guide has been the most.
Are those the ones that everybody's getting?
Yep.
Sexy athlete combines what? MAPS aesthetic and MAPS...
mobility.
Performance.
You don't even know your programs?
Yeah, what's going on here? Mixes them together, melds them together so you can become a sexy athlete. Look, you can find all these programs at mindpumpmedia.com. Again, enroll in any bundle. Any MAPS bundle and get a free guide of your choice and any t-shirt of your choice. After you enroll, make sure you email admin@mindpumpmedia.com. Let them know your shirt size, your address, and which guide you want, and you'll get them. For free.
And you wanted me to do that?
If you want to pump your body and expand your mind, there's only one place to go. Mind Pump. Mind Pump. With your hosts, Sal DiStefano, Adam Schaefer, and Justin Andrews.
What did the app guy tell us the very first time that we met with him at the Open Loop?
Oh, yeah, he's just like, oh, dude, FOMO. And we're like, excuse me?
what did he say?
You want to explain yourself?
What was it?
He's like, everybody's got FOMO. I'm like, excuse me?
What's FOMO?
Fear of missing out.
How would you do that?
Talking about the importance of an open loop.
Yeah.
So like when you're creating, like when we first were starting the app, right? We were going in the direction of like an educational tool. And I don't know how long was it, Justin, before we realized, or before it was when we met those guys, right?
Yeah. We met the two guys from local in Willow Glen, and then we met another guy up in San Francisco, but. It was
when was the aha moment for us about like, oh, we have to change this to more like a game than we
because of the psychology of it and how people use it.
Who was it that we met with? Yeah, because we were on.
I think it was Sean.
Was it?
I think it was.
We were on a path to build the tool, and then I don't remember if it was the engineer or software guy or who it was that we met, but they're like, dude, you know that like. 80% of like all like successful apps are games,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, games.
Like 80%?
The top
like,
selling apps of all time.
And tools are like hardly any tool. It's very, very rare that like a tool that you find as an app.
We call it like a utility app.
How long did you guys work on your app together?
Dude, probably like 2 years, a year and a half.
At least.
Yeah, two, if not more.
If you count, I mean,
did you guys invest a lot into it?
Yeah.
We'll make it back someday.
Oh yeah, let me tell you, we'll finish. There's enough invested in it that I won't just leave that project.
It, yeah,
I wouldn't just leave that there.
People will know.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, those things happen too. You also got to be okay with that. If you
had to shelf it for a while.
Well, remember when we were still even working towards it when we all first got together? It was just that at that point, Mind Pump had taken off and was growing at such a faster rate that it was obvious where our time and money should be invested. So, you know, when we were doing the app was just costing money, And there was no
bleeding.
Was no business yet. It was just something we were building.
What would you guys consider, kind of on that topic, we'll say learning experiences in business, like because people will say failures or whatever, but they're all learning experiences.
Yeah.
What were some of your, or what would you consider one of your biggest learning experiences was?
Well, what's important, you know, and like how much. Well, I don't know. Like for me, it's more like I shoot from the hip, just like we all do. And I have an idea I believe in so much, I'm going to go for it. Mm. You know, I wouldn't take away from that, but at the same time, like I should have further educated myself quite a bit more before actually like completely pulling the trigger. Mm. So that would be like a takeaway for me.
You know,
sure.
Years ago, I trained a gentleman who was a very successful entrepreneur. And I asked him, what was his key, you know, how did he succeed? Like, tell me the key of how, you know, what you did that made you so successful. And he literally said to me, I asked him the wrong, he's like, you're asking me the wrong question. That's not going to help you. I'm like, what? He says, Sal, I want you to ask me how many times I failed.
Oh, I was just going to go there.
Yeah.
And it was like, boom, like blew me away. Like, oh, shit. So I asked him, I said, well, how many times have you failed? By the way, this was a guy at the time I was talking to him, was like multi-millionaire, like big time, right? Mm-hmm. Baller. Self-made, completely self-made, grew up poor. And he said, Sal, he goes, I've filed for bankruptcy 3 times. And he told me specifically what happened each time. Each of those times, he lost more money. The first time he lost X amount of dollars, the second time he lost more money because he had more to lose.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, fuck, most people after the first time, they made their money back and started doing okay.
Yeah.
They're like, I'm not going to take any big risks.
Mess with it.
I remember when I lost everything. But he lost it all again, made even more, lost it all again, and then ended up where he was at that point. And I remember thinking like, okay. Mm-hmm. I guess that's what this game
is all
about.
There's definitely something there. Yeah.
That's what this game is all about.
You got to shoot, man.
Well, I've given the analogy of it being like, and obviously if you don't play cards, this doesn't make sense to you, but it's so much like.
Is it like go fish?
No, it's like, it's like playing poker. It's like playing Texas Hold'em. And I feel like you're never going to get at the table where you're going to make millions of dollars until you've gone through the process of risking everything you have and losing all of it and then winning that all back again. So each time each business that I've built, each time it's been a greater risk and it's been a greater reward.
Mm-hmm.
And each one of those failures to me were so important of the whole journey. Like each business that I've ever done, there's always something about it I don't think any of them were a failure, to be honest with you. Even the app.
That's kind of my problem. I don't really address it like that.
Yeah, I look at it as it was all part of the process. Mm-hmm. And just even like talking about the app, like there's no way I would invest that much money and literally just let it's just not my personality to completely let it die. It's just that other things take a priority. And that's happened many times, and that's a constant lesson, I think, is sometimes like when you're especially as an entrepreneur, when you're building something, sometimes it takes a different direction, and I think those that are best at it learn to maneuver with it and to go ahead and let that go that direction. Like,
well, along those lines, they're talking about like if you're an entrepreneur and you have a startup, the only startups that make it are the ones that have that mentality where whatever idea they have and they've been working on, they're completely willing to change 180, you know, direction as far as what they were doing.
You have to.
And their team, if they have a team that can do that, you know, like it requires everybody to be able to think more long term and not, you know, be bullheaded and stuck on an idea if it doesn't make sense.
No, usually you'll meet someone and they'll be successful or whatever, and they'll be like, oh, I just came up with this idea and then it took off, and then people think, oh man, you know, so lucky, like they just hit on a grid, but they don't see all the years of other shit that they did that led them to that point, all the decisions they made, all the failures or whatever you want to call them that they made up until they got to that particular
point.
Dude,
I'm on my fourth invention idea right now. It's in the process. So.
Well, I think, and going back to...
Is this the vibrator dumbbell?
Yeah.
Going back to my... I don't know how I shift back to poker analogy after curl.
Strengthen your vulva.
Going back to the poker analogy, I think you have to. Lose enough, and enough is all relative to where you are in your financial journey. Because you losing $100 when you only have $105 is a big deal. You know what I'm saying? So to each their own. In this,
yeah, we got to be careful. We got to have a little. We got to do a little disclaimer because I don't want some dudes like Sal.
I lost all my money. It was the Sal method.
Sal, I was listening to Adam on Mind Pumping. I just took my fucking house. I took all the money out and I said, "Fuck it." I'm putting it into my new invention, which were calf raised shoes, and then I fucking realized that they already invented those and lost all my money.
Well,
thanks Mind Pump.
I'm definitely not.
My wife left me. I don't have my kids.
Yeah.
I think I'm more of a visionary than I am more inventive. And I think that's Justin's more inventive, I think. So this is also why I thought we always played off.
Yeah, it was a good match.
I'm more visionary. And I think a learning lesson, like you talk about the app and stuff, is... You know, and I feel like it was one of those ones that I know better because I've approached other businesses with the same mentality, which is, you know, especially when you're trying to sell something that's tangible, right? Like when you're selling health and fitness, this is a totally different business. When you're selling something that's actually tangible, like an app, something that somebody can look at, touch, feel, I care more about gathering the people first before the actual thing is that I want them to, I want to sell to them. Mm-hmm. Because you may be the most popular guy ever, and what, you still only have within your reach a few hundred people, maybe 1,000 if you're big time popular. You know, that's not enough people. And people think like, oh, because you have 10, 20, 30, 50, 1,000 people following you on Instagram, like, oh, you must have a good business off that. Like, no, it doesn't translate like that. So I think gathering an audience of people that are willing to listen to you, that would even consider buying something from you, is the most important piece first. You can always create and invent something that, you know, fits with your vision or whatever it is you're trying to do. So I think so many people get so caught up in that they lose sight of like, hey, this is great. I could have the coolest app in the world, which I feel like we are on pace of doing. But then if, you know, my family or friends are the only ones that do it, like it's things going viral are very, very rare. I feel like as much as we hear about them happening all the time, it's not.
Dude,
as,
can I just say
or
something?
Or it's just funded.
Can I just say something that's incredibly frustrating, but true? I mean, and here's the thing about life that I've learned many times is that just because something's stupid or irritating or frustrating to me doesn't mean it's not true. Mm-hmm. So I have to come to the realization sometimes that that's just the way it is. And here's the truth, and I hate to say it, but you could literally sell a piece of shit in a box with really good fucking marketing and really good reach. And I hate to say that because it sucks, but the evidence is all around you. Look at all the products and crap around you that are garbage that sell millions of copies. The number one selling piece of fitness equipment of all time, is a Thighmaster. The Thighmaster, which is a complete waste of money and garbage. But it had great marketing. It had Suzanne Summers, and they sold millions and millions and millions of them. So I think a lot of times people invent shit or come up with ideas, and they have no idea how to get it out there. And it's just, you know how many great ideas are probably just sitting there?
No, I know. I think about that constantly. And, you know, it's just like, if there's just so many dumb products that don't need to exist that exist because, like, people just buy it up, you know, because it's just.
They marketed it well.
They marketed it and they put it in front of their face, you know? And it's funny, too. Like, I was thinking about along terms of, like, if you have this, like, grandiose vision for something that you know is, like, awesome and you really want people to, you know, like, buy into your idea of it and all this stuff, like, this is, like, why George Lucas was involved with American Graffiti first. You know, he had to prove himself and that he can create a good film and
God, you have
get
such a
traction
big,
and all
such
this. I have a total man crush on this guy. But like, nobody was buying into his concept. No other studio was giving him any money. Like, he just was like, fuck you guys. You know, I'm making this movie. And he made it, and it was the most epic thing ever.
Didn't he make something else? Another movie that was real?
Yeah, then there was that other movie. God, I forget what it's called right now, too. Yeah, but that one was weird. THX, I think, or something like that. Yeah,
I don't know.
Somebody correct me, but you know, I know somebody knows. But yeah, that was
who did Star Wars?
That was interesting.
Are you serious?
What are you talking about?
Who did Star Wars?
Shut up.
I'm serious.
That's what he's talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know, but you didn't say Star Wars. Anyway, continue.
Yes, he did.
Oh, he did?
you didn't say Star Wars?
Yeah, I did, didn't I?
Oh, maybe you didn't. Maybe you're just referencing Star it and you're Wars. Teasing him because he didn't say it.
Yeah.
Oh,
okay.
Bro, I think that went right over his head for sure.
Yeah. It went way over my head. You ever have
a joke?
You ever have something backfire that hard?
Yeah, I was like, what did you just say? I have no idea. Of course Justin's talking about referencing freaking Star Wars.
Everybody quiet!
I feel like people expect it.
Oh my God!
Shut the fuck up!
Chimera Quaff!
Today's Quaff is being brought to you by Chimera Coffee. It's the only coffee that is infused with all natural nootropics for a cleaner, calmer, and more focused buzz without the crash. Click the Chimera link at mindpumpmedia.com and input the discount code MINDPUMP at checkout for 10% off.
It's the motherfucking Quaff!
The eagle has landed!
Quaff!
Arf! First question is from Happy Healthy Free. What are your biggest insecurities?
Oh my God. We might need this might be have to be the whole episode. Sal's got so many.
Mm-hmm. I do. I get insecure sometimes, my big dick. Ooh. No, you know.
Whoa, dude.
Hey, that was a big dick reference.
Not only I'm allowed to do
heard that in a while.
I had to say it before Adam.
When you say it, it sounds so bad.
It sounds it sounds creepy.
You said it to me. Yeah, I cringed. Like, I was like,
that was
oh my
forced.
God, he just said that on the radio.
A forced big dick reference. experience?
No, this is actually a great question. I've had several throughout my life that I can identify now that I've moved through. My first biggest insecurity was definitely that I was not that I was skinny, that I wasn't athletic or whatever. I wanted to build muscle. I needed to get bigger, and that one stuck with me for a long time. I didn't really remedy that one for up until relatively recently. I was an adult by the time I really faced that one head on and started changing my behavior because I started to identify that. I had the other insecurity that I had later on was, you know, when I had my wellness studio, I would train people who were high-level executives and people who worked in medicine. My facility was next to a hospital, so I had lots of surgeons and doctors, and we'd have these great conversations, and inevitably, they would end up asking me where I went to school. And I was insecure about the fact that I had no formal education. I had not gone to college.
Now, you say that because I share this one. Do you also feel like this is also what drove you to be what you are today too? Right? Like, do you believe that's a big part of what pushed you to learn more and to grow more independently?
You know, no, it actually, that didn't necessarily see for me.
I'm just curious because we share this insecurity, and I know I'm very well aware of it. I'm also connected to, also know what it's connected to.
Yeah,
so
no,
I'm curious
for me, it didn't motivate me and really to do anything because I wasn't insecure about it until I became an adult and was working with these people, and they would ask me all the time. You know, I'd show them something, you know, I'd be training a surgeon and, you know, they'd tell me their knee hurts and they can't do particular exercises and they'd tell me what's wrong with their knee. And then I would identify the recruitment patterns and change the recruitment patterns, identify the imbalance and fix that. And then they'd be like, wow, where'd you learn that? Where'd you go to school? And then I'd say, well, I don't have formal education. And for a period of time there, I kind of felt insecure about it. But then I realized it was actually a strength because then I could tell them that I learned it on my own. And when I told them that, then they were all like, wow, you actually went out and learned that all on your own? And I'd say, well, yeah. So, but that was an insecurity for a second there where I would say that and then I'd feel kind of, like, you know, I don't have formal education. But then I turned it, I kind of reversed it and it became something I became very proud of. Not the fact that I didn't go to school, but I became proud of the fact that I learned what I know because of my own self-motivation, my own self-exploration and finding resources and learning from them. Same thing with my insecurity about my body. I turned that into a strength. I talk about it on the show all the time. It helps me connect with people, with a lot of my clients. Most of my clients that I would train didn't have insecurity with not having enough muscle. It was usually people who had an insecurity with just, you know, being overweight or whatever. But I was able to connect with them through that. And so I turned that into a strength as well. Now, my insecurity that I'm identifying, something that I need to work on, is on how I am as a father. That's a big one, and mainly because more recently I've gone through a divorce, and that weighs very heavily on a parent, and just speaking for myself, very heavily on me, because you don't want to ever do anything that's going to harm your kid, or you know, you don't want to give them a bad childhood, or you don't want to...
What made you connect that recently? Because this is something that I feel like you've just kind of recently gone through in the last year or so, or it's more...
It was a divorce.
Yeah, what was it when... What set it off and you realized, like, this is an insecurity?
When the divorce first happened, I'll get a little personal, I hope you guys don't mind, but, you know, I'm not alone in this. I've talked to a couple people. It's really helpful talking to other people who've gone through this, by the way. But I kind of checked out. Like, I checked out and escaped for a second. Like, I couldn't really go to family functions. I didn't want to be around too many other people. For the first month, I was just checked out. And even if I was around my kids,
Which is normal, right? Because you're worried about... I mean, you guys were together for over,
15 years.
15 years, yeah. Right? So, I mean, her family's like your family and everyone's local too, right? So
yeah,
the likelihood of seeing each other.
I know that logically, but then when you get past that point, you're like, oh fuck, I was checked out for this long. My kids didn't see much of me and holy shit, they must have felt abandoned or whatever. And so you become very like, oh shit, what did I do? And then even now, you know, I don't have my kids. I'm not going to have them full time, right? They have a mother that's also very involved in their life. So I'm not with them as much, and their routine has changed. They had to go because you're not just divorcing. It's not just two people divorcing. It's divorcing a whole family, and so you start to feel guilty and insecure about, you know, what's going to, you know, how are my kids going to deal with this? And what are they going to tell their friends and all this other stuff that people go through when they do this? And because of the stress involved, you know, parenting is stressful. I don't care if you're divorced, married, whatever, you know, it's always stressful, and you're never going to be perfect. There's going to be moments when you're going to snap at your kids because you're stressed out and maybe your kids are being shitty that day or whatever. And you snap at them, and that already makes you feel guilty. Any parent who's listening can relate to that, where after you snap, you're like, oh, fuck, I shouldn't have said that, or I shouldn't have done that. Well, add to that now the fact that you've just, you know, divorced, you're getting a divorce with the children's mother, and now you're like, oh, fuck, here's another layer of something that I've just added them, or at least that's what you think. And so that's an insecurity now that I'm trying to deal with, because I know very logically and objectively that, you know, being in an unhappy marriage is worse for your child than being in a happy separation or divorce, especially when both parents are working, you know, well together with the kids. But still in the back of my mind, there's still that insecurity. Am I being a good dad? Am I doing the right thing? Mm-hmm. Did I make the right decision, you know, for them? And so that's something I'm currently dealing with. And I know I'll get through it. And I'm just, you know, even talking about it now, it's therapeutic. This will probably help me listening to this episode. I think, you know, addressing your own insecurities is important because they will drive your behavior so strongly.
That's what I was going to ask you. Do you find that it's influencing how you act?
Are you kidding me? Like, I spend more money now on my, even though I'm more broke than ever because of this whole situation, I spend more money on them now because you try to compensate. So it's driving me to do shit that I know is not important. Like, it's not important that my daughter get a freaking stuffed animal every time I see her. But because of that insecurity, I'm, you know, compensating by doing this kind of stupid, meaningless shit. You know, the stuff that's real important is just spending time with them. Right? I know this.
Yeah, but you connect to it. That's what's important.
What's important, like I said, like what I'm trying to say is when you find your, it's important to identify your insecurities because they will drive your behavior so deeply that you don't even realize it. Like, you don't even know that half the shit you do and half the shit you, the way you act with your significant other or with your friends or your family or the way you treat yourself or the way you eat or the way you whatever is driven by these insecurities, which are rooted in illogical things or things that are not serving you. And so it's important to really identify them. So I just want to make that point. I'll let you guys go on.
That's powerful, man. I don't know if I can follow that up.
Well, that's pretty dope that you you have the mental awareness and self-awareness to connect that right now. That's something you're going through. So that's when it's, and to me, I think that's the greatest takeaway from you sharing that is that, you know, it's really easy to look back. Like, I feel like talking about, you know, me being the skinny guy, trying to get big and muscular and stuff like that that's definitely one of mine. But that's an easy one to talk about because it's so fucking long ago. And I feel like I've grown through that. And even when it does surface, I'm very aware of it. You're going through that right now. That's why I was really interested to hear the things that you've noticed as far as it in affecting your behavior with the kids and stuff like that. So, I mean, so many people I feel like lack this ability. I think I've said this before on this podcast, if not, you know, emotional intelligence and self-awareness to me I think they trump almost everything, man. Like if you have those two things, it automatically drives better character, better work ethic, just a better human. And people that want to constantly reflect on themselves and what role they play in this whole scenario. And a few people do that. It's one of the things that I think I absolutely love about you guys and being in this part of this whole movement and what we're doing. Like, you know, I couldn't ask to be with three better gentlemen that have this ability. I think this is why the business works too. And even if there's ever conflict or disagreement, because we all have this ability, you know, regardless of who's right or who's wrong or who had the better idea for this or who wants to pull in this direction. It's like at the end of the day, we all have this ability to reflect on what we own out of it.
But even that, here's something I'm learning about that as well. I've always had pride in the fact that I was the kind of person who could, you know, examine myself and look at these types of things and identify an insecurity or an issue and address them. And because I found pride in that,
sometimes they sneak by, it actually
prevented me.
Of course.
Because now I'm like, well, I'll always, you know, be okay. And that in and of itself prevents you from doing these things. So I'm going to tell you something right now. the reason why they're insecurities or and they exist is because you're not aware of them. And so you think you're aware, but you're not. And in fact, the deeper you go, the more layers you uncover, the more layers you end up finding.
Well, it's probably the surface of what is underneath that even.
Dude, it's a difficult process and it's a long fucking process. Yeah. And there's it's so difficult and so painful, in fact, that your mind has hidden it from you so effectively that you don't even realize it's there. You have no idea. Yeah. So look, we'll speak about the fitness ones because most of our audience is into exercise. Obviously, we're a fitness podcast. But the fitness insecurities, the weight insecurities, the I don't have a muscle insecurities, that I'm too fat all the time insecurities, I need to track every little morsel insecurities, they're so insidious. They're so deep inside of you right now that most of you listening right now are thinking, no, I'm absolutely fine. I don't have those things. But if you really take an honest look, and sometimes it requires you to step outside your body, and that means you got to get away for a second, maybe even stop doing everything for a couple weeks just so you can kind of take a look. You'll shock yourself. It's very, very difficult to identify. And when you do, it's very painful.
I think this is why people think people like Tony Robbins are magicians, because all they do is they really just direct you to go deeper, go further. You know, it's not really that insecurity you think. You know, how's your relationship, you know, with your family, you know, and then targets like who specifically has affected you in a certain way, or what sort of traumatic experience like happened to you as you grew up and it was, you know, impressionable with the way that you interacted with people from then on. And you could get pretty deep, you know, with this type of a question of an insecurity. Like on a surface level, though, you know, there's definitely things that if you can identify them, like it, that'll kind of lead you down that, you know, that tunnel that is really an important thing to go through. And like it's something that will provide you an all new look at, you know, who you are and how, you know, you can sort of repattern these processes and things. And for me, like I definitely had issues with, you know, my body. I was a very like bony kind of kid, and you know, like I actually did really want to put muscle on. Like I was like really skinny, and my brother's very skinny, and that's just kind of our makeup. And so, you know, that was something that kind of ate at me. You know, as far as like what other things that I've realized about myself, and this is why I haven't really liked to talk very much, is because I'm very hypersensitive as to what comes out of my mouth, as far as like if it sounds stupid or if it's not the right thing to say, or if it's going to affect this or that person a certain way, or you know, like I project like all these things way out ahead of time. So it's like, you know, this is going to affect this person this way, and I don't want to be, you know, like I don't want to be an asshole to this person and say it wrong, you know, this way or that. Like I'm way too like calculated with that. And it's been really freeing and liberating for me to just be like, you know, fuck, say what I'm really thinking, you know, like just express yourself and get better at it. And you know, and that's something that I'm still working on.
Did that come from something when you were a kid? Were you told a lot of times that, you know, like you said something like, oh, my God, that's stupid, don't say that? Or
I think it's because I was kind of a jokey class clown that wasn't taken too seriously. And I think a lot of it stems from just like an expectation of me to lead into, because I was good with my hands and trade wise, like I was just expected to do manual labor, and that, you know, like I try, it made me overcompensate for that to go to college and to get good grades and, to prove myself. Cause when I did let myself slide and I had moments where I didn't get as good of grades, you know, that was like, oh, okay, yeah, so this is, you know, this is where you're going to end up. You know, everybody had already written me off as such, and like that was where I was going to end up. And you know, I just decided that that's not who I wanted to be. You know, I wanted to learn more about myself, and I wanted to prove everybody wrong.
See, it's interesting because insecurities can definitely motivate and drive someone to achieve, you know, huge things, great things. They can, I mean, I'm not gonna lie, they can definitely motivate you to do very strongly. However, they can cause a lot of anxiety, stress, and pain. And I don't think they're the best way to motivate you. And in fact, you know, look, would I be in the fitness industry if I didn't have the insecurity with my body when I first started?
Maybe,
you know,
not.
Maybe not. Yeah. I know I like fitness a lot. It's my favorite, absolute favorite hobby. But my passion, if I'm going to be quite honest, my passion is people. I just really like people a lot. So mm-hmm. I don't know if I'd end up in fitness. I'd end up doing something else that had to, you know, had to do with working with people or helping people. So
I would,
it's interesting.
I would agree with that because mm-hmm. I knew I wanted to do something with people. I actually at one point, I remember, how funny is this, because of all the counseling and therapy and stuff that I was in being a kid, that those that have been listening for a long time know the story that my father passed when I was 7. He took his life. Then my mom married into an abusive relationship that I was a part of for 13 years growing up. So you could say I had my fair share of being in and out of counseling and family therapy. And I actually got to the point where I felt like I learned so much as a kid growing through all that. Like, I remember like looking at my parents and feeling like, I don't know if they really learned very much, but I definitely got a lot out of all this. And so I actually liked that, right? And I liked that whole process. And that's what kind of drove me getting into, like, you know, psychology. And I was actually interested in possibly being a counselor at one point. Like, so anyways, but I'm with Sal, like, as far as my insecurities are very, very similar. This is, I think, why we connect so well, because I think we just see eye to eye. And even though we're a couple of years apart, we're in similar parts of our journey there. And I feel like maybe where one is further along, the other one's not so far along. And so, you know, always sharing and being around him is very refreshing for me, and a great reminder of what I'm always working on too. So like he said, the being skinny kid and what got me into fitness, that never goes away. I mean, I definitely,
it's weird, isn't it?
Yeah. It's, I think that's okay. I think part of that is understanding that, is just learning how, and you mentioned before, is how it can dictate your behavior. And that's what's important, is I don't allow it dictated in an unhealthy way. And you're right, it can go in the direction of it being unhealthy, because let's say, you know, that drives me to train really, really crazy and hard and like become almost obsessed with it. That can be very unhealthy too, even though it's working out mm-hmm. and training and better your body. But I also think it's okay that it drives me in that direction, you know what I'm saying? But it also, it's important that I don't allow it to become obsessive, right? I think anything overdone can be unhealthy for us, even health and fitness, right? So, you know, I'm okay with knowing that it's there. I continually try to work on the reaction and the behavior to it.
See, I think that at some point, it will no longer be an issue, but I think it gets there when we stop fighting it. I don't know how else to better explain it.
I think I know when the sign is, and we should know, being in gyms as long as we are. I think it's about 53 to 57 when the guys walk around with no towels and they brush their teeth with their dick in your face while you're in the bathroom. Spread.
Dude, I'm doing that now. I'm almost there.
Maybe you're almost there. I'm pretty sure that's the.
That's not circumcised.
You guys want to see it right now?
That's the true zero. The true zero fucks journey. We are always heading towards, but so I think that was always a big one for me. Probably, if I'm being completely honest, the one I'm most challenged with and still have to constantly work on is, because a long time ago I decided that I was never going to hold back. Justin says that, you know what, that's an insecurity of his about talking. Well, you know, that's part of mine too, is not saying the right thing and sounding smart or being smart when I say it. And a long time ago, I decided that I wasn't going to let that hold me back, you know, that I was going to say what was on my mind. And sometimes I'm going to make up a word. Sometimes I'm going to trail off. You know, that's just I'm not going to worry about people judging me. Mm-hmm. I've decided that a long time ago. Now, the flip to that is this, because I've become this person who has that zero fucks mentality, and I'm going to say what's on my mind, and sometimes I'm going to offend people, and sometimes I'm going to sound stupid. I'm not going to let that affect me, what people think. But sometimes I can. And sometimes, for me, my biggest insecurity, being somebody who, you know, I went 2 years of junior college, and then I continued on with my fitness and heading up in the 24-hour fitness ranks and doing that. And that always kind of weighed on me, like, ah, man, I had all of my closest friends all have their masters, some have PhDs. Like, I have a group of very intelligent, driven friends that are always around me, and I'm the one without the formal education. So Of course, when we get into, you know, deep conversations, and I always have this like in the back of my mind telling me like, you know, I feel inferior because I didn't go through this process of learning. Now, knowing that, I also feel like that's part of what drove me and motivated me to learn so much on my own, you know, because from literally from 23, 24-ish to now, like the amount of books and things that I've read and is 10 times more than what I did all my years of schooling. So I think that there's a good side of that, but then there's still that I allow it sometimes to dictate my emotions because it's an insecurity that I still am dealing with, especially now. Like I feel like if ever before, I feel like I kind of felt like I had a hold of it until we started podcasting again. And now that we're like out there for everybody, and especially since the way we're coming after kind of academia and how a lot of things are done, I feel like that's added this new pressure to me of worrying about that, of constantly worrying about, you know, people judging me because I don't have that. And so for sure, this has been something that I've had that's resurfaced in the past year and a half, 2 years that I've have to. And I just try and remind myself to be true to who I am and my character, which I believe that I've always been that person who is, I'm going to say what the fuck I want to say, and I'm not going
to
let.
I know we got to move on to the next question, but you know what this reminds me of? Have you guys gone, you have recently, but maybe not with a bunch of people. You ever notice when you go like to a pool or a pool party or the beach with a bunch of your friends and they know you're a trainer, they know you're, you ever notice how their insecurities start? And I feel bad for them. Does that happen?
All the time.
Yeah.
I feel very, very bad because I see them.
Sometimes I have to, when I come to a house, I'll like literally tell people like, hey, I don't want to talk about food or nutrition. Yeah, like I have to not, like
bring it up,
and I'll go over and grab something bad intentionally, like to get everyone to relax.
Well, because
otherwise I can feel the tension in the room.
Who's like, right for K?
Like, dude,
I'm watching them do everything they're doing. I'm like, oh my god.
No, I'll be at I'll go to the pool or something with a bunch of friends, and you know none of them are as fanatical as I am about exercise, which is absolutely fine. And I don't judge people at all when we're in the pool, but they feel because I'm a trainer. And it's everybody has to make a comment. Like they'll take their shirt off and be like, "Oh man, I haven't worked out in so long. Don't look at me." Or you know, I better not eat that because I'm already kind of. And they'll look at me like, "Right, Sal?" And I'm just like, "Fuck, I feel bad for them." You know what I mean?
Well, of course, because I know we all know because that's like clients to us, right? Like I see all the bells going off. Like, oh wow, that's a definitely a thing that you're dealing with because I don't give a shit. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. You can take your shirt off and have a big ass belly, go drink a beer, then dive in the pool. I don't give two.
No, I don't care.
But the fact that you feel the need to say something tells me that. Right. That's something that you're
now flip with. That when you're sitting with your PhD friends and you're feeling that way and they're probably thinking the same thing. Like,
oh yeah. So
you know what I'm saying?
Well, that was something we talked about insecurities, but what are some of the things that we've done to overcome them? Well, one of the things that I've had to practice is when I get in front of somebody, I have this, and I always catch myself when I tend to do this, the need to tell you how smart I am.
Mm-hmm.
I need to
prove it.
Throw words in there.
Yeah, no, we can put us in a room of four or five PhDs, and I will start talking. I won't be nervous to talk, but I also will feel the need to let them know how smart I am. Which that's such an insecurity. It's like I have
that's
to.
That's good that you're aware of that. Yeah.
No, I catch. It happens, and it's something that I have to. And I've gotten better. You know, I've gotten better at it, but I definitely
that's
know.
Good.
No, I do it for sure.
22 Big Mac. Would you recommend MAPS Black or MAPS Green for muscle imbalances? I was a baseball pitcher in college and know for a fact I have overdevelopment right lat, rear delt, trap forearm, and right calf. I am currently doing MAPS Green after completing red, and I just don't want to make the imbalance worse with the barbell movements in green. Would you recommend dumbbell substitutions, switching to MAPS Black, something else?
Love this question.
So this is not a super common issue. Now the issue of right and left imbalance is quite common, especially if you've never worked out and you're right-handed. Your right hand is going to do better. Your right side is going to do things better than your left
side. Yeah, this is a right-handed pitcher that we're talking about.
But this is a pitcher, who's been pitching for a long time. And I've worked with, I don't know if you guys have worked with.
Yeah, I have.
Yep.
So I've worked with college, pitchers who were pitching since they were little kids, and it is there. It's like two.
There's a lot of time there with that repetitive.
Yes, it's like two different bodies.
The first time I had a semi-pro guy that I took on. I'll never forget. He was the first one that this was another aha moment. We talk about as trainers, where I realized at that moment that man, athletes aren't as healthy as everybody thinks they are.
No, yeah, huge imbalances. Yes.
That was the big, like, because up until that point, as a young kid, young trainer coming in, I was just like, you know, I still looked at athletes as like athletes, man. They're superior to everybody.
They're the top of the food chain.
Yeah, exactly. Top of the food chain from health, nutrition, to physique, their physical capabilities. But what I realized, and I realized this when I got a baseball player, was, wow, you know, so many sports are, they have these patterns that you do over and over and over and over. And we know this already as trainers, that any repetitive, you know, movement, a pattern like that over and over is going to cause some sort of an imbalance. And the better they were at it and the longer they had been doing for it, I've started to put together the worse the imbalances were and issues. And so, you know, this was, and this is why too, when I say that, and I always get pushback from people when I talk about how, like, don't be fooled. I know you look at this athlete and you go like, oh my God, they're so, I want to look like them. I'll be like, and so a lot of people go and they try and train like them. So, you know, we look at, you see Reggie Bush's physique on the cover of Sports Illustrated, you know, last year or whenever the hell it was. And people go like, holy shit. And then next thing you know, he's tied
a workout program.
Yes. He's tied to some workout program and he's selling the shit out. And everyone's like, dude, I mean, I want to look like that.
Dude, I'm doing the Reggie Bush, like, crazy squat
it's
combo.
Like, no. You won. That's probably not what he does. And two, you don't want to train like a football player anyways. I mean, that's not ideal for you at all. So yeah, I think that's why I was so excited for this question, because there's a couple things that I would take into consideration. I think Maps Green would be awesome. I think what he suggested is right on point with the direction I would start taking him, which is
unilateral training.
Yeah. More unilateral training. So here is where this is. And why
now, would you guys say to train according to the weaker side? Because
always
wait till it catches up. Yeah.
Yes, always unilateral. Always train the weaker side first. It's all about form and connecting. It's more about that than the weight that you're moving, and then whatever, you know. This is a time too where I would take it all the way to where right before my mechanics start to break down. If my mechanics start to break down, I stop right there. Whatever reps that I got to, I'm going to mirror that on the other side.
Even if it's easy on the other side.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's an important point.
And it's going to be. It's going to be. So that's the challenging part for most people mentally, is to be able to discipline themselves.
To diminish the one side.
Yes. Yeah,
because it's a mental thing to do that, but it's so much more beneficial to allow for your body to, you know, break through these imbalances that way and train that side of the body that's been so dormant throughout all these processes.
This is also too why I love talking about this question, is because this goes back to, this is how our MAPS programs are designed. We built this solid foundation for all of them and everybody, and they have an adaptation focus and they're phased all out, but we always preach that they're, you know, this is a perfect example of how I would totally modify a MAPS screen for somebody, is this athlete, as I'm going through with him, we're going to still use MAPS screen as the primary program, just anywhere where you have barbell movements, I'm going to replace it with a similar movement, just with unilateral. So now I'm going to do a dumbbell work with that. So
see, I would take it even a step further, is I would do green, do, you know, make sure you'd use dumbbells instead of barbells for most of the movements. Still do your mobility sessions. And I would take it a step further, and I would add trigger sessions for the
specific body parts.
Yeah, and trigger sessions you'll find in MAPS anabolic.
Well, let's be honest, this is the piece where MAPS yellow is going to connect all these dots.
Well, right? I mean, it goes a lot further. It goes even a lot further than that.
Well, yeah, but this is another, you know, we just recently have had a couple questions lately, and I'm just like, you know, it's kind of nice too that these are coming out right now, because this is this type of question, I think that's what part of what influenced the direction of MAPS yellow.
Yeah.
So
which is soon to be released, but I would incorporate some trigger sessions on the weaker side on off days. Mm-hmm. Now, be careful with your intensity, because it's a weaker side, because you're using dumbbells, because you're training according to that side, you can overdo it quite easily. But the trigger sessions, the frequency is going to be very, very important, that frequent muscle stimulation. Mm-hmm. I would do trigger sessions almost every day. 1 to 2 a day, maybe 3 on days that you're not doing much working out, but you want to send that signal to that side to try to catch up. The other thing I would tell you is to be patient. You've got a major imbalance. I know, I've worked with
that's years and years of movement that's patterned in one direction.
It might take you, and I'm not, you know, you're not going to like to hear this, but it might take you a year.
Yeah.
It might even take you a little longer, a year before that side, you know, gets to the point where it's not such a glaring
imbalance. It all depends. It depends on how diligent he is with it. I mean, if you, If you are rigorous with it as far as like staying on it,
consistent,
consistency wise, especially when we're talking about like the mobility and the trigger stuff. Because
this is a totally different mentality again going into this.
Yeah,
it's not like I'm shooting for PRs. I'm ramping everything up. This is like I'm addressing something that needs to be addressed, that is going to improve my overall abilities, you know, from here on out.
The reason why I say that is it's close to home for me right now, because I, in the last probably 6 to 8 months, I've been heavily focused on mobility, and, you know, I've started first with my hips, and then I've worked to my ankles and shoulders. Each time I kind of focus on one specific area, not only am I doing my training and I'm addressing it, I'm addressing it with my mobility sessions, and then I'm frequently throughout the day doing these little tiny drills that just take me a few seconds to do, and that's really where it counts. Like if you start doing that frequency, I can't stress frequency when you're doing corrective stuff enough. I mean, we preach frequency about building muscle and how key it is. Well, guess what? It's even more key when you're talking about repatterning yourself right here, because what's happened is when you've been a pitcher for this long and you're throwing right side, you have made some serious...
That's tens of thousands of reps.
Yes. So reps the other direction, trying to correct it and fix it, not intensely. It doesn't have to be. It's just like throwing a ball isn't super... Just tossing a ball isn't super intense for you. The same concept when you're doing these corrective exercises to fix the imbalances, it's repetitions, you know? So just working at it multiple times throughout the day, just for brief little, you know, 60-second to 3-minute bouts. Like, you'll be surprised on how far that will take you.
To kind of go on to this point as well, like addressing these things mid-season, and when you're an athlete and, you know, you are so dominant with one specific pattern that you're doing over and over and over again, you know, for longevity's sake, too, maybe you are getting stronger in that movement, but for longevity's sake, you know, we are going to need to, you know, include that within your skills training, your weight room training, all that kind of stuff. You need to make sure that, you know, it's not going to diminish completely on that.
This is why it's so important if you have a kid that's in a sport, is to pay attention and get them to do exercises that are, or movements that are different than their sport. Because if they do this, whatever they're doing for years and years and years, they can create some pretty big imbalances. And even swimming, oh, well, you're moving the whole body. You shouldn't be able to create imbalance. No, swimmers have issues. That's why there's
probably the least though, right?
Maybe. I mean, soccer is lots of running. I don't know. I mean, there are.
I'd be really interested, actually, because if I were to pick a sport, if you were to tell me out of which.
Well, you'd have to do a lot of different types of swims.
It could
that's
be
the
shoulder
thing.
Or, yeah.
That's knows? The thing, because usually people who swim competitively for years, they end up competing in one
stroke. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, if you were just
really
like just a butterfly stroke and yes. you didn't right, do right, freestyle right. or backstroke, yeah.
They specialize you right away. Like when you get good, they start to specialize you in all you compete in your whatever event.
Which that's a good point to yeah. that what you just said right there is technically, I think that's something that we right away notice too, right? If somebody specializes in something or they do something like that, more than likely they have some serious imbalances somewhere else. I mean, that's where I think that's part of like the evolution of sports for us happened, was we started to realize that these body types, you know, and I know we're getting away from semantotypes, but we started to realize that, hey, this person who's built like a canoe is going to make a better swimmer. And it's seems kind of obvious, but I feel like we really didn't start to put that together until like the last 20 years or so, maybe mm-hmm. 20, maybe 30 years. Before that, a basketball player, a football player, a wrestler, a swimmer all just kind of looked the same. They all had this kind of wrestler athletic look to them because they were that mesomorph type body type that built muscle, burnt body fat, weren't overly big, weren't really, really small, like that perfect size, where now sports has become so specific that imbalance is almost play into the role of...
It enhances a lot of specific skills.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
Steven NASC, how would you guys train a client getting ready for our 210-mile journey where they will be averaging over 20 miles per day over 10 days? Also, any nutritional advice?
Okay, this is a very extreme...
210 miles.
Yeah, 20 miles a day for 10 days. So this is a pretty extreme endurance endeavor.
You know who this, with hearing this right now, are you familiar with Omar's business?
Business.
I don't know how I said it like that. Omar Lima, business. Our boy.
Yeah, no, what does he do?
So this is a shout out to one of our boys. So
he's one of the better trainers.
Absolutely.
I know.
Absolutely.
One of the better trainers.
I would say top 10, top 5 for sure for all of us as far, especially in the area. Omar is, I think he's based a little south from, I think he's out of Mountain View now. Is that where he's at?
I believe so.
Yeah. So,
I'll find the name.
Keep going. give him a legit shout, because if there's somebody who's like this, literally this is his specialty. So him and I, the last time we ran into each other, I told you guys when we were in Maui and I hadn't seen him in a while. Really nice time. We were both in the airport for like an hour, 2 hours. So I got a chance to really catch up with him. And I've always really liked Omar. And
functional core fitness.
There you go. Functional core fitness. Yeah. So we got to talking about his business, and you know, he started way back when I think he's between Sal and I. So Sal started
after I did.
Yeah, he started after you, but before me. So he's been in the business for a very long time, and I've watched him kind of evolve as a trainer, and always liked the content and the stuff that he was putting out there. And I was like, man, dude, you travel so much. Like, I'm so jealous. I always look at your page and your – I mean, he is gone everywhere all over the world.
Oh, he's run with the Bulls. He's,
everything.
Yeah,
so
every
do you know what his business model is? So and we talk about each one of us having like our specialty type clients, the type of people that we appeal to, right? Each one of us have already talked about this. Well, Omar is into these clients. He's like, you know, I started to find like a majority of my people that were coming to me were, you know, that between that age – 35 and 60, and they wanted to feel in good enough shape to accomplish something. And he said, so I started to create this business model when they would come to me is, you know, that was part of the deal when they first sit down. If they didn't already have a place or an idea, he would help them come up with an idea of to accomplish something like climbing Kilimanjaro or hiking the ruins or going through the safari jungle or like doing like these type of like physical active trips.
Oh, that's cool.
And so part of like how he justifies all of his traveling is he takes himself through and he trains himself to get ready for specific trips, just like this one that we're getting explained right now, that are like long journeys or hikes or whether he has to accomplish something, whether it be swimming or riding a bike up in mountain doing. I mean, he's done all kinds of stuff, and these are the clients, and this is what they do is if they're looking to do something like that, he's like, that's what I want. And he goes, you know, for me, it's just been about going through it. Like, of course we understand the science and like what you're supposed to do, but he goes, you know, I can now tell them like, listen, you know, when you get to this far up the mountain, you're going to feel like this, you know, and you're going to want.
Oh, that's
it.
Another level of coaching.
Oh yeah, it's and so he saw it's taking my coaching for these specific type of things to a whole other level because I've experienced, you know, having to hold my breath for a long time, extreme temperatures of cold, extreme temperatures of hot, you know, long journeys, short, you know, hard ones, and where I have to swim, run, and you know, what I'm saying, like he's done all these things in different environments. And so he's literally built his business model around that. And so all these clients come to him and he gets them ready for these. It's really cool.
I think that, I mean, you hit the nail on the head. That's the majority of the people that do these things are people in their mid 30s to 40 something, 50, who want to accomplish something. I don't see too many kids signing up for a 210 mile, you know, journey over a period of 10 days. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
This is like people later on, they're like, I need to fucking do something to just feel better. But I'll tell you what, when it comes to the training for this, definitely want to train in a way that mimics what you're going to do. So if it involves lots of hiking should be the core of your training. Now, as a trainer, you should also identify imbalances that are going to happen as a result of all of that hiking. If they don't already have them, let's say they're already, you know, imbalance free or whatever, identify imbalances that are going to potentially happen and start now training around those or correcting them now because whenever you have long, repetitive type motion over, you start to.
Example of that would be this, which is super common. So probably somebody who had a desk job or sat down for a long time, whatever, are going to have some sort of an anterior pelvic tilt, which think of that person with a slight tilt like that going on 200 miles straight, their low back is going to be on fire.
Fried.
Yeah, so you want to correct that, right?
Yeah,
correct that with, you know, strengthening the core independent of the hip flexors. This person, if they're doing lots of walking, I would strengthen their glutes. I would give them good hip mobility to protect their knees. Mm-hmm. I would do ankle strengthening. They're going to be working lots of calves, lots of soleus, lots of gastroc. So I'd strengthen their tibialis. I'd have them do lots of exercises, strengthen the shin part of their
ankle. We just did a great ankle mobility video that I posted on YouTube just recently for
excellent,
that. You know,
excellent.
That's perfect for that.
As far as nutritional advice is concerned, there's been a lot of research on these ultra long distance type
ketogenic
events. Yeah, and these athletes are coming back and saying that they've gotten their best results by getting their bodies fat adapted.
So let me stop you right there, because I know that I read this originally and that's not all the question. And what you just said is important, because I think in there it says that he, during this 210-mile journey, he doesn't have a lot of options for food. So
that would be a big...
The direction you're going, I think, is great advice, even more so because he did put that in there.
Yeah, because if you're fat adapted, here's something you want to consider. Even if you're lean, you know, you take a lean athlete, their body will store maybe, I don't know, 6,000, 7,000 calories worth of glycogen max. Your body has a pretty limited ability to store glycogen. But when it comes to energy from fat, even a lean athlete will have something like 25 to 30,000 calories of stored fat. So when you run out of glycogen, your body will tap into that, and you want your body to be able to switch back and forth very easily.
And that's the part right there that's important is...
Yeah, because you don't want to crash. You don't want to get to the point where you run out of glycogen. Now your body has to go through this nasty transfer for this process, and now you crash.
The whole process of becoming fat adaptive. And, you know, good episode to reference this is going back to where we just had... 100-mile
Zach Bitter.
Yeah, that was a great interview. He talked about that.
Yeah, he's a perfect example. And he still utilizes carbs on a race.
Yeah, because happens is he goes low carbohydrate, high fat, is in ketosis a lot of the time, not all the time, but a lot of the times during his training. So his body has gotten really efficient to switch to body fat or to fat for fuel. Then because now he's so much more sensitive to carbohydrates, when he does his long, long, long races, he does refuel with carbohydrates because it's such a quick source of energy. That's the benefit of carbohydrates, is you eat them and boom, it gets turned into energy much faster than fats. But he does it with far less carbohydrates than he used to, because his body utilizes them so much more efficiently. So, and by the way, when you're training for something like this, you don't want to try this right before your race.
No.
I've seen people make that mistake where they're like, oh, I got a race next weekend. I'm going to try this new thing that's supposed to give me much more energy. And then they end up with diarrhea or something stupid like that. And, you know, not a good idea. So this is something way before the race that you should
get acclimated. Shit, I can't even say that.
Exactly. Yeah. What he said.
I want to go back and
acclimated.
Reiterate some things as far as the training leading up to that, because I'm assuming this question is coming from a personal trainer who has a client who they're trying to train for this. And I know Sal kind of brushed over the what we would do as far as imbalances. And then, you know, of course, if they're going to be hiking, they need to be practicing hiking, right? So that is true. Some things like within the hour that they're with me, like my sessions would kind of look like, you know, I'm still going to train them and strengthen all, like I normally would, like through a MAPS program. I still would take them through something very similar to like a MAPS Red, but then they would have, or MAPS Green actually, probably more so with someone like this, because, you know, they're going to be doing things in multiplanar movements, hiking up a hill. I'm assuming they're going to be going left, going right. They're not going to be in the sagittal plane always. So, you know, maybe they're going through MAPS Green, but then all of our, like within our, where we would normally do like rest periods and we stress rest periods, I might have this person doing farmer walks and reinforcing like really good posture. Like, so we've addressed all the imbalances like Sal was talking about. So we're working on that pelvic tilt or whatever. So they're working on holding themselves up in a neutral alignment. And then I'm taking them and I'm doing like farmer walks with light weights between the sets just to reinforce that. I'm not trying to fatigue them, not trying to kill them. I'm just enough weight to where they're having to pull back, retract, and depress the shoulders, and really teaching them to focus on how they're walking and making them do little walks in between us doing our other exercises and movements to help build strength. So there's how I might modify one of our programs to what the specific goal is.
I tell you what's real important. What's real important with long duration type competitions like this or events is strengthening good posture.
Yeah.
Very important, because
that's why I say just reinforcing that walking with good posture.
Yeah, you start to fatigue and your posture starts to break down, that's it, man. Yeah. Everything starts to break down at that point.
Everything now starts muscles compensating. Are, yeah. Oh, and, something well, and it, bad waiting to happen.
Think of it like this. Like, take yourself, you know, standing upright, holding like a 25 or a 45-pound plate, and then slightly bend over like a waiter's bow, like you're just trying to bow, and do that like about at the halfway point, 45 degrees, and see how long you can handle that, holding that. Well, when we're just slightly off, our postures, all like that, we're carrying all the rest of our weight, which is typically 45 pounds or more on our upper body that we're holding, and you're and it's just putting that stress, and you just don't feel it because it's not quite as stressful an angle. The stressful angle I use that as an analogy to show people. It's like,
but even a slight angle, you know, changes things where if you do, you know, 20 miles a day for 10 days, let me tell you something, by day five, you're not moving very well.
And that's how I know that, feels like it's that's why I use you. That analogy that their low back will be on fire. You know, you just know that.
Low
just,
back, hip know, flexors,
yeah,
neck.
You just know they're going to be driving them crazy. And it's just because they're not moving properly. So I can't stress that enough, is addressing that and then just reinforcing like the good posture and when they're walking. And don't just do farmer walks to do farmer walks because you're trying to fatigue them or build their stamina. You know, you're really trying to reinforce good posture because you know this person's going to be hiking for 200 miles straight and you want to make sure they're heel striking, walking correctly the entire time.
Mm-hmm. And grease up those nipples.
That's right. Yeah. Great advice, Justin.
Yep.
If you like Mind Pump, leave us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes. If we like your review and we pick it, you'll win a free Mind Pump t-shirt. You can also find us on Instagram at Mind Pump Radio. You can find me at Mind Pump Sal. Adam is at Mind Pump Adam. And Justin is at Mind Pump Justin.
Thank you for listening to Mind Pump. If your goal is to build and shape your body, dramatically improve your health and energy, and maximize your overall performance, check out our discounted RGB Super Bundle at mindpumpmedia.com. The RGB Super Bundle includes MAPS Anabolic, MAPS Performance, and MAPS Aesthetic. 9 months of phased expert exercise programming designed by Sal, Adam, and Justin to systematically transform the way your body looks, feels, and performs. With detailed workout blueprints and over 200 videos, the RGB Super Bundle is like having Sal, Adam, and Justin as your own personal trainers, but at a fraction of the price. The RGB Super Bundle has a full 30-day money-back guarantee, and you can get it now, plus other valuable free resources at mindpumpmedia.com. If you enjoy this show, please share the love by leaving us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes and by introducing Mind Pump to your friends and family. We thank you for your support, and until next time, this is Mind Pump.